Well, one thing that just comes up for me is one of the emerging probabilities I have is that there's going to be these geocentric epicenters of doing the healing work. I call them coherent centers or healing nodes. And so it's actually where the center of gravity, the excuse that we're gathering, is doing this healing and development work. So transformational cafes, right? Actually saying, okay, we're all coming into these coffee shops to have a coffee and have these conversations. What happens if we make that explicit? And the staff working here and the people here know that this is a container of unconditional love and it's a safe space and you can actually come and all of you is welcome. And there are people on site who have facilitation capacities for people who need to be met in a moment of a deep healing process. And so healing hostels, transformational cafes, eco-villages, retreat centers, places where people can go physically and be in community that is organized specifically around what we're talking about.
Throughout history, the great questions have been asked, and great research has been undertaken, always expanding the territory of the known by shining a light into the unknown. Where is that cutting edge today? And can a community of people from all over the world, each carrying their own unique journey of discovery, come together to inquire at the edge of purposeful evolution through conversation? At Portals of Perception, we think it is possible, and we hope that you will choose to be a part of this exploration.
This conversation with Forrest Wilson follows a propelling inspiration for the Portals endeavor, which is to encourage the next generation of leaders, people who intuit the deeper change underway and are endeavoring to step into the transformation arena. We explore here ideas for shaping experiences and ecologies where people of diverse backgrounds can collaborate in ways that heal and give birth to real transformation. Along the way, we discover aspects of the new operating system that's emerging across the frontiers of science, the arts, business, health and well-being, and almost every field of human expression. We are indeed experiencing a new world that's trying to emerge through us as individuals and communities, where perhaps the cause and the calling of this time is to be engaged in this co-creative process. Join Aviv Shahar with Forrest Wilson for A New World Emerging.
Welcome to Portals of Perception. We are delighted you have found us. You can join the Portals of Perception Network on the site by subscribing and becoming a member. And you can attend one of our events. You can like us in all media channels, and you're welcome to share our posts with others. Become part of a global network that explores all sorts of fascinating questions at this time. Thank you. A propelling inspiration for the Portals endeavor is that we seek to encourage the next generation of leaders, people who intuit the deeper change underway and are endeavoring to step into the transformation arena and lead. There are next generation leaders emerging in all the core domains of life: education, health and well-being, science and policy, diplomacy, art, and business and entrepreneurship, and next generation leaders in the inner development realms of emergent communities and the work of presence. The Portals Project is interested to develop conversations with leaders in all these fields to explore and discover the new operating system that's emerging at the frontiers of these fields of human expression. Today, I'm speaking with Forrest Wilson as part of a series of conversations with next generation leaders. Forrest facilitates communities to come into coherence through practicing presence. The propulsion of his endeavor is to deepen in our essential wholeness as a way of sourcing our emerging future. We want to explore what that means and what are some of the core practices that Forrest applies. So let's dive in at the deep end first. Forrest, it's good to have you here.
Aviv, thank you for having me. It's an honor to be here with you.
How would you describe your core interest, your core inquiry, and the journey that brought you to these inquiries?
Gosh, what a beautiful question. So much of it you articulated in the invitation that you opened up this segment with. I mean, a huge part of it for me is centered in healing. You're talking about a new operating system. And as I have become aware of the transition that we're in collectively as a species in terms of operating systems and wondering into our emerging future, it's become evident to me that healing is an integral part of that process. And so I find myself fascinated by the frontier and the leading edge and what is our emerging future? What is this new world that wants to be born with and through us right now? And then also in the process of getting there, doing the healing work, the trauma work, going back and looking at the hundreds of thousands of years of humanity and our own, as individuals, our own life experience or our generational experience coming through our family lineages and saying, okay, where can we go back and take the best parts? And also what moments in space and time were we not able to be fully present with because they were too much for us to be present with in the moment they were happening, and how can we fully metabolize those experiences now? And in that, open up the possibility for new possibilities to manifest right in front of our eyes.
That's beautiful, totally beautiful. So let's proceed into the now, and then if we need, go up and down the timeline. What do you believe is the transition that we are in right now?
Well, if you look at these major inflection points in human history, we had the agrarian revolution, the industrial revolution, then the information age with the invention of the internet. And these are times when the meaning-making system, the operating system of human consciousness shifted. And right now, my theory and a lot of people's theories is that we're in the consciousness revolution and the healing revolution. And so to me, a lot of questions that we are being invited into as a species is, you know, what is it like to coexist peacefully with each other as a humanity, right? And what does it look like for us to coexist peacefully with all life and our planet? When we take a wider time horizon and we start to think about the lives of our grandchildren or great-grandchildren or seven generations ahead, which I know you and I have connected around our just a curiosity of what kind of world do we want to create for the generations to come? We really need to shift the way that we're acting as a species and come into more coherence with other forms of life and the planet itself if there's going to be one for future generations to live on. So the transition we're in is saying, okay, what world do we want to create? What world do we want to live in? And then in that, being invited into where did we go wrong or where did we not develop in the ways that we could have been the healthiest? Maybe wrong is not the most helpful word, but where could we have developed more health in a more healthy way? And can we go back and sort of rewire the code a little bit or create new code that's more functional?
And so by way of retracing just a bit, how would you narrate at a high level the journey story that brought you to this kind of efficacy and clarity that we are indeed experiencing a new world that's trying to emerge and be born through us as individuals and communities, and that perhaps the cause or the calling of this time is to be engaged in this co-creative process, co-creative act. What's the journey that brought you to, at what point do you say, this is what I sense that I'm being called to participate in? How do you get to that threshold?
Yeah, again, it's a beautiful question. I mean, it is a lifelong inquiry, right? Like we're all in this game of wondering into what in the heck is this life about? And I certainly faced an existential crisis in my later teen years and in college. And then when I was 24 years old, my father passed away, which was a really catalyzing experience for me. And I was coming off of having lived abroad in Singapore and then in Dubai and having a pretty successful corporate career fresh out of college. And I remember sitting down with a friend and saying, I feel like I've achieved everything I'm supposed to achieve, right? And then my father passed away and I really started to think about deeply sit with daily just the fact that I'm going to pass away too one day. And I would visualize who's going to be at my funeral and what did I want them to say. And at the time, I wasn't crazy about what I thought people might say about me at my funeral. And so I really started to dig deep and say, okay, how can I be the change I want to see in the world and really take on the work to heal and to look at where I did things that I wasn't happy I did, where I could be more mature. And then really in that, ask, where can I be of service to the larger whole in humanity and consciousness in the world? And having this profound sense of sort of the, like, I'm nobody, I'm just a guy, and like, I can, what I do matters. There's this meaning, like this irrelevance and also deep relevance of that really came online for me. And in wondering into, okay, what do I want to create, and starting to think about my own funeral. I mean, I'm already 70, 80, who knows, maybe 100 years, 150 years out in the future, and going, well, wait a minute, what's the world even going to look like then? And starting to reverse engineer the thoughts of, wait, like, it, something's got to shift here. Where it, this isn't, I don't want to just die and be told I was a good CEO or donated some money or something. Like, we need to heal. And my individual journey has deeply informed what it seems like we're up to collectively right now, which is that at some point, part of our continued evolution and growth is that we need to turn towards our pain. And that becomes our continued entree for growth and evolution. So that was a lot of my 20s, was personal exploration, following my own curiosities, seeing what is the life my soul was calling for me. And in that, opening up to all the wounds and pain and traumas that hadn't been, that have been hiding in the back doors or the back rooms of my psyche and being. So.
And what happened then, and where did that lead you to?
It led me all over the world. I mean, I went on quite the journey, traveling the world and studying with healers and mystics and shamans and intuitives and energy workers, and visiting the energetic, I call them the energetic capitals of the world, right? Like Bali or India or Mount Shasta, and going to these places where people, I felt called. I started to live my life going where I felt called to go. And then got into work with a really good psychotherapist, and really studying consciousness and body work. I do body work, and I'm a biomechanics practitioner. So healing through the body, mind, soul, being, just seeing, becoming increasingly aware of how complex we are as humans and as beings, and just on a self-guided, like, I'd call it a gap year, but it was a lot longer than a year. And just going wherever that unnameable pull calls us. And that's led me right here talking to you. So here we are.
And what are some of the salient intuitions that found you through those journeys and inquiries and are informing you today? You already spoke to some of these. I'd like you to talk a little more about the new world that you are sensing that's trying to be birthed through us. And what is it you're seeing? What is it you're experiencing? What is it you're intuiting? What is the nature of that impulse in the way it is exercising itself through you?
I feel like I'm going to catch a sliver of an answer to that question. Like, there is a whole, so much to see from so many angles. And I'm just going to pick one little perspective to perceive through. But a few things that come online for me. First of all, each individual is at a different place in our own evolution across humanity. And each collective is at a different place in evolution, right? So what's going to unfold in different parts of the world is going to look differently based on where we are. I'm currently in Savannah, Georgia, in the United States. It seems to me like what's next for the United States is we're going to sit down and we're going to start to talk to each other. Hopefully this is what's going to happen, is we're going to sit down and a lot of the polarized voices in our culture and our collective are going to sit down. I dream of these round tables where you have a table of unconditional love, where all of you is welcome, and we can all put our swords and shields down and talk. And you can have a police officer, a Black Lives Matter protester, policy writer, community activists, all these different folks come from all different backgrounds and contexts, can sit down and we can have a conversation and say, hey, how is each person trying to help? What does each person want? And how are we going to get into conversation with each other and start to work together? So to me, the increasing polarization and divisiveness we're having in our culture is just a sign of we're getting ready to start to turn towards each other and say, okay, there got to be other possibilities here. Let's talk. So that's in the United States, right? In sub-Saharan Africa, that might be helpful. And there's likely going to be a different next step in terms of creating basic infrastructure, technology, processes and systems put in place for continued growth and evolution. Now, on the leading edge of consciousness, which is kind of where I'm most fascinated, it's shifting. Right now, if you look at the World Bank, for example, I've got an article coming out that's called From SDGs to Emerging Probabilities. So SDGs is the World Bank's Sustainable Development Goals. And what I'm actually inviting is a shift in perspective from, instead of problem-oriented consciousness, like let's have zero poverty, right? Or zero hunger. There's a problem there, hunger or poverty, that we're going to go and solve that problem. And I'm saying, let's actually shift in perspective from problem solving to possibility. What's the possibility we want to live in? Well, we want basic survival needs to be met for all human beings across the planet, right? Basic necessities. What would a world look like in which those are met? And if we can just make that slight shift in perspective, a whole new world opens up. We go from this problem-oriented, we need to play problem whack-a-mole consciousness. I mean, problems create more problems, right? Into a creative possibility-oriented consciousness that says, hey, let's all organize ourselves around the inquiry of how can we be happy, healthy, fulfilled human beings, and how can basic survival needs be met for all human beings? And then, I mean, from there, it's like, we could do that today. I mean, that's the thing that blows my mind. It's like, we're not lacking resources. We're not lacking technology. We're not doing anything. It's just that the infrastructure and systems we've created aren't created to serve that creative outcome. They're created to serve other creative outcomes. And so I just invite people into a perspective shift. Like, let's look at the world we actually want to create if we could reinvent our planetary systems.
Yeah, that's delicious and riveting and rich. So along those lines, you offered a quote on the announcement that we created for the Co-Creating Humanity's Future Global Zoom event that we are soon conducting. And you said there, all systems and stories are breaking down all over the planet as we open up and make room for the new world that wants to emerge with and through us. And you're now talking about sampling some of that new world and some of its expression. And then you're saying humanity is being invited to take a breath and pause in possibility. And you just gave an example of what it means to pause in possibility and shift from problem focus. That one fraction of a degree shift, it's not a 90 degrees shift, it's not a 180 degrees shift, it's a fraction of a degree shift to possibility and opportunity. And then you're saying, and dream a new world into being together. Let's just slow the conversation a little by asking you, first of all, so what are these old stories and old systems that you see breaking down all over the place? And then we'll come back to how can we see through the stories that are breaking down the new stories that are emerging? What is your observation of the stories and the systems that are breaking down?
Yeah, beautiful. I mean, again, like a small sliver would be any system that is rooted in power over people, power over another, power over life. Those systems are breaking down. Systems that aren't in alignment with nature are breaking down. Mother Nature, our planet Earth, and also our true nature. Many systems come to mind, but I'll just stick with maybe thematic.
And what inside it do you see to be the core or the archetypal story that reached its obsolescence point and is disintegrating?
I mean, I suppose when I look at a lot of systems, especially out of the Industrial Revolution, we have a consciousness in the Industrial Revolution, which is about efficiency and effectiveness and speed. And so you look at most large corporations are formed in the consciousness of the Industrial Revolution. Our public education system, and I'm speaking about in the United States, is formed out of the consciousness of the Industrial Revolution. And so you're, in a way, our public education system is manufacturing employees, or, well, yes, employees, and they're manufacturing human beings through a process. And, right, like if we look at the emerging probability of basic survival needs are met, we don't need to manufacture employees to work in corporations that are formed in that same consciousness, right? So those two came online together, the corporations we have and the public school system, both were birthed out of the Industrial Revolution consciousness. And it's time now that we look and we say, okay, when we look at it, when I make the assumption that curiosity is the engine of learning, right? So if we are encouraged as human beings to cultivate our curiosities, then we're going to be lifelong learners. And I also make an assumption that we're all born into the world with innate gifts to share in service to others and our planet and that and our unique, beautiful expression as one form of consciousness. that we have like a obligation to pursue the cultivating those capacities and bringing light to those gifts. And so I wonder, what would it be like to create an education system in which we just created a healthy ecosystem for a happy, healthy, fulfilled human being to thrive and to cultivate their curiosities and to be in a network of support and love and presence as we flower into the most beautiful, unique expression of the truth of the beauty we all are, right? And so to me, there's this, we've hit the limit of the Industrial Revolution consciousness in the sense of we're trying to go so much faster, but to where? Right? Like we're now at this point, we're just burning through our planet at a rate unprecedented in the history of human, in the history of humanity. And so we really are being asked to slow the heck down for a second and go, wait a minute, where are we trying to get to so fast? And what is our claim that that place we're trying to get to is actually better than where we are currently? And let's actually sit for a moment and pause in possibility and go, wait, is that, are we really trying to get where this track has taken us as quickly as we can? Or do we want to consider some other tracks that we can create?
What do you imagine is ready to find people when they, as you say, become ready to pause in possibility and dream completely new dreams? What is it that awaits to find them?
Well, there's a few things that are waiting for us. I mean, the first is the support of the entire universe. There's a whole different operating system and a different way of being and way of living that comes online when we start to follow that impulse and that path and that string that tugs at us that we can't claim to know or even describe, really. It's just that thing, that it factor, whatever it is. And life starts to take on this magical, mysterious, full like orientation that's just full of wonder. And it's like a fantasy world, right? Like the experience of opening up to the mystery of life and everything. It's a whole new way of being, and we get resourced, right? Like I actually break that word down into resourced. Like we actually start to be sourced by that essence that we are. And that becomes our number one source of fuel. it sustains us and nourishes us and heals us. And we're also met with, as we start to slow down and be more fully present in the present moment, we're also met with the residual and residue of any experiences we couldn't fully be with in the moment they were happening, or that are coming through our family line or are present in collective. And in that, that's how I define the word trauma, is residual from an experience that we couldn't fully be present with in the moment it's happening. And so it's, as we're playing this game, it's also really important, and for anyone, that we find networks of support and people who can be with us as we're starting to do the most courageous work we can do, in my opinion, which is to start to feel through that residue and residual and start to reintegrate into the fabric of our being and the interconnected whole.
So let's explore the two sides of the story you are describing and building. Tell me first more, how do you experience and what comes alive for you when you said these words a minute ago, to be resourced by our true essence? How do you sense into that, and what perhaps is the practice that goes along with it?
To me, I feel like what was really helpful when I started that inquiry was the question of, what is it I can't not do? And then that question evolved into, how is it I can't not be? What is it I can't not be? And to me, what seems to happen is that we start to embody and experience more fully, moment by moment, our true nature and our essence. And the more we experience it, the more familiar it becomes as us and the truth of who we've always been. And the practice is reconnecting with that truth and letting it have its way through us and seeing what life looks like from here.
And what happens then when we do that?
That's a great question. I guess we end up on this video recording talking to you. We're talking to each other, I should say, because that's unfamiliar to you at all.
Yeah, indeed. So then, and the other side of what you're describing is working to integrate all those moments when individually and or collectively, and perhaps even archetypally, we were not present to the opportunity or the challenge or the vista that opened for us below or above the line, below the line into pain, above the line into glorious possibility that can also be blinding and be registered as pain. So we humans, we have the capacity to withdraw and shrink from both, from pain and from possibility, mm-hmm. which is why your words to pause in possibility mm-hmm. are compelling, because it's not a given. It's not a given for a human to be naturalized and released into possibility without wondering, well, hold on a minute, is this real? Who is tricking me here? What's the catch? And if there is no catch, I shouldn't be fully breathing into this and releasing myself, because if I do, something bad is going to happen after. All of those suggestions, part of recoiling, retreating from being able to live and breathe into the fullest possibility. So what are you finding, as you said, when you begin to do the courageous work of integrating those moments that you were not present to?
Lots of things. Finding lots of things. But it seems like in what I really want to point to right now is that both in this process, in our conversation collectively as a species, what we're most being invited to do right now is look at the stories that we're in. Look at the stories we're creating. Look at the stories we've been given, our social constructions, our conditioning that we receive in our upbringing, and actually say, what are the shared stories we want to have moving forward? And so what stories can be helpful and useful and most functional moving forward? And to me, one story that's really helpful is that every wound is a womb, right? We, by going through a wound and actually healing, we can actually heal and live a completely different life. If we fully get to the root of a wound, if we fully get to the root and fully feel what wants to be felt and experience it. And I mean, when we have trauma, we have these frozen, fragmented, calcified adhesions in our consciousness. And when we take our loving awareness to that place and be with what wants to be when we go through the process of healing, and that resolves, when that unwinds, when it untangles, and it releases back just into the field of pure awareness, we're now moving through life as a different being. And that's not just for our own personal experience, that affects our interconnected whole, because we ultimately are that field. It's our human mind that carves up consciousness and creates a separateness. But when we heal those traumas, we actually enter, this is portals of perception, right? We actually go through a portal, a womb, a birth canal. And we're not standing in the same reality as we were standing in before when that trauma was there. So I don't even remember your question, but that's what I'm.
Yeah. The build question I will ask you on that, I will introduce as a caveat to the process you're inviting us to, which is to say that to enter this process, to enter the birth canal of trauma work, there is on the front end some capacity building that may be needed. And then there is the velocity of metabolism mm-hmm. that one is able to bring to the table or not, because unless one is able to almost at times metabolize at the speed of light, the unlocking of some of what you're describing can kill you. So sometime the healing process itself is too powerful in magnitude and significance that it by itself can kill. And so this is just, a caveat or a warning attached to the prescription you offered, which is you can only metabolize the trauma you're ready to metabolize until such time as you build capacity to be able to absorb and metabolize and transmogrify pain and the energetic formation that held it, such that it is being released. Because when you describe going through the birth canal or the portal of this process, you're truly describing a transformative transmutation process where the energetic that you held in your body and or around you and or in the collective is no more and is being reconfigured. So to do so, one would have to come with an intention, devotional formation, and or capacity that will enable and will unleash that possibility, or else one is to discover weight that perhaps one was not ready to bargain and process through. So just a warning attached to the invitation you made for us.
Yeah, and thank you. Thank you for the warning. And you know, to me, it's so beautiful to see all these communities that where the center of gravity is doing this work of healing, forming all over the planet. A lot of these emergent communities that you and I have connected around, places where people can come. And there are people, first of all, who have capacities to convene these spaces and are developmentally informed, trauma informed, and can actually convene a space where we can have a safe space to risk being raw and risk being real and be held in unconditional love and unconditional presence and have a support system, right? It's actually a symptom of trauma to think that we have to go through all of this alone. That actually is a byproduct of trauma. And so I love your warning because I create the story. We're not meant to go through it by ourselves. That's the story I create. And when we heal, the whole heals. And so there's these really tricky, subtle, nuanced lines between where is interconnectedness and where is codependency, right? Where's dependency and where's interdependency? And those continue to reveal more and more subtle, refined, nuanced ways of playing as I'm in this game, because we can't see what we can't see, right? And so sometimes we're in a codependent connection and not aware of it. But I love the warning. And for me, again, I really think it's important we deconstruct some of these old stories. Like I grew up in a cultural context where I was told that men don't go to therapy. It makes you weak if you go to therapy. Men aren't supposed to have emotions, right? And for me, deconstructing all of that and actually celebrating, let's create some new stories like, hey, doing inner healing work is some of the most challenging work we can do. Let's celebrate anybody and everybody who's taking on that journey. And how can we normalize healing? That's a really empowering question to me. How can we normalize? I think what's happening right now in our culture is that what was traditionally done in a site, like in a single person experience in a therapist's office, is now being invited out to be done. I mean, you go sit in a coffee shop that has a good millennial population anywhere in the country, and people are having conversations about archetypes and Myers-Briggs and generational trauma and embodiment and somatic work. And it's just so palpable in our collective experience right now that we're all saying, hey, this is the most fun game we can play, quite frankly, is get together and wander into the mystery of life and explore the ways we can be deepen into our wholeness and show up more fully in life in every moment. So to me, like creating shared stories where we're actually celebrating this process and coming together in community and in relationships and grounding our relationships in these types of connections. I mean, the most profound relationships I have in my life are infused with and sourced from the wisdom and connections and learning and love that unfolds when people gather together in this type of connection and relationship. So yeah, definitely appreciate that warning and invite everyone to create solid structures of support, networks of support.
Yeah. So when you wander into, as you describe, these coffee places and what used to be approached in secluded, specialized, sometime mystery school type esoteric circles is now going mainstream. And as you describe, you have circles and circles of millennial where that is the conversation and they choose to, at least for moments, to unplug from the social network and become the embodied network in person to be in this discovery. What are the wildest hopes that these experiences release and activate in you?
Well, one thing that just comes up for me is one of the emerging probabilities I have is that there's going to be these geocentric epicenters of doing the healing work. I call them coherent centers or healing nodes. And so it's actually where the center of gravity, the excuse that we're gathering, is doing this healing and development work. So transformational cafes, right? Actually saying, okay, we're all coming into these coffee shops to have a coffee and have these conversations. What happens if we make that explicit? And the staff working here and the people here know that this is a container of unconditional love and it's a safe space and you can actually come and all of you is welcome. And there are people on site who have facilitation capacities for people who need to be met in a moment of a deep healing process. And so healing hostels, transformational cafes, eco villages, retreat centers, places where people can go physically and be in community that is organized specifically around what we're talking about. And what would a world look like where the excuse for basically any reason that we're gathering in what's emerging is to do this healing and developmental and evolutionary work. And so what happens to how we organize ourselves around food or energy or technology or community when that starts to be, when we become aware that that's the reason that we're getting together? And to me, it's the wildest dream, right, is that we live in heaven on earth, right? We live in a work optional society. We heal our planet. We create technologies that kind of do any manual labor for us. And we spend our time enjoying ourselves and each other and sharing our gifts. And if you look at the economies that are emerging, right, there's a whole mostly untalked about emerging economy of people who have healing capacities getting together and just doing it and just exchanging healing gifts with each other in all different contexts. But to me, that seems like what might be possible for the future of humanity is we get together and celebrate each other, celebrate life, and really live a experience where we feel that the like a deep peace and a deep love and a deep trust in that which is beyond any understanding by the linguistic mind, and get to be fully present for every moment.
The two awarenesses that are surfacing for me as I listen to your quote-unquote utopian story is, first of all, it's not so utopian in the sense that you're describing that it's emergent already in pockets and places all around the world, really. The second is how much of this story that you just told is an integration of inherited stories told through the ages, each time in a different variation, and how much we all are the actualization of the highest prayers and the highest intentions of generations before us, plus something else that's arriving at this time that's unlocking this possibility that was not perhaps available in quite the same way before, and that we're called to possibly be the bridge makers of the best of what was and some of what is emerging, inside of which, by the way, we need to develop, as you said, the capacity to slow down the conversation and talk through the details and talk through the policies and talk through the government structures and economic models that will truly express and embody what you describe as new consciousness. Because it ain't going to happen just because we wish it to happen. It's going to happen and get a chance at manifesting because there will be people across all domains of life manifesting and working different levels or different rungs on the ladder or different subdomains to give it a chance to be instantiated and then to find a way into a sustainable story. Or else we build something that has such an obvious bug that it becomes a supernova. It's something that brightens our sky for a day or a week or a month or a decade, but ultimately implodes. And what you are describing is a story where we bring together some way to unlock the collective genius to solve the problems and the complexities that the world is now faced with from a different operating system, from, as you said, different consciousness, because indeed the historic, the modern, and the postmodern consciousness is incapable of solving the problems it created, as our friend and uncle Einstein told us. So that's what I hear in that story, and I also hear the work, and we don't need to be heavy about the word work, because work can be playful and fun and energizing and unlocking and releasing. I was speaking yesterday with somebody in a very large leading corporation in Silicon Valley where I led an endeavor 2 weeks ago, and I said, how is the project unfolding in terms of the work streams that we developed when we met for this 3-day Zoom event? And he said, believe it or not, it's the most fun people ever had, because the day's work is where all the heaviness and the weight is. When you convene people to imagine the future, which is what I happen to be doing also for a living in the corporate space, as well as the bigger arena that you are describing, but even there, what people tell you, this is the most fun we have. So the conclusion is, we shouldn't be afraid, we shouldn't be overly concerned about the work that's called for. The other breakthrough insight from this experience, by the way, Forrest, is people always say to me on the front end of a new corporate endeavor like this, they say, well, hold on a minute, this, we will have to do all this work in addition to all the work we do every day in running the business. And it seems to them as total impossibility until such time as they get acclimatized to moving into the space of imagining a new future, as you were just demonstrating so beautifully for us. And few things happen. First of all, they unlock different energies, as you're describing. When you enter a new consciousness, you shift completely your personal energy and the energy around you. Second of all, you bring online capacities and awarenesses and a new operating system such that when you get back to deal again with the day-to-day running of the business, you do so from a different place. So all of a sudden, you're dealing with the problems of today from a different place altogether because you are engaged with an inquiry of where do you need to be in the future. That's the work I get to do with corporations. What you are describing here in this portal's exploration is a vision of doing so at a global scale, humanity at large, recognizing that different people will apply themselves to different facets of the inquiry and the challenge, and that ultimately the entire system, the entire body needs to get engaged in the work. We need people working on education, on economic models, on technology models, on the policy front, on the new frontiers of updating science and how science defines search for truth and how to do so in a way that integrates the inner worlds and the exterior worlds. All these need to be part of the journey you are describing, because what will not work and has proven to be insufficient over the last 4 or 5 decades is pockets trying to escape the planet, quote unquote, or escape the gravitational field of the intractable problems by doing some kind of a spiritual bypassing to some advanced altered states. We need that work as well, but if that work is done without some integration, with the entire body coming activated online, something is broken and is incomplete, and we're not likely to be as successful as we need to be because of the risk, the civilizational risk that's now on the table.
Hear, hear. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and that's when we really start to get in. When we talk about operating systems, it's like, you know, people say like, I see things from third person perspective or fourth person perspective, but more and more these days I'm looking at people and going like 3.0114567, like, and how can we meet the form of consciousness that's arising in this moment? And what exactly does this human or this being or this form of consciousness need to heal? And like you're talking about, we can do things like spiritual bypassing by trying to continue taking the well-trodden journeys in a lot of way. But to me, there's more refined, more nuanced, more subtle, I don't know, intuitive or just perfectly matched ways to meet an expression as it emerges.
You're describing the fine-tuning of the capillary action that's required in a living body such that every cell is touched by the new energetic content that's and the new nutritional content carried by the blood. Or if you were to talk about an operating system, the neural system, the new neural network, internal and collective neural network, needs to connect all the nodes in the system, all the parts in the system. So to do so, it needs to be able to dock in at any level that the system is at. So you need people who are, I suppose you could describe them as magicians of the system, as spiral magicians. They're able to go up and down, left and right, north, south, east, west, and travel through to every aspect of the system and offer it exactly what it needs. To me, what we are describing there, we're beginning to describe the new human model that's emerging at this time, which is ultimately what I heard you describe in the story. So now I'll bring a bit forward the story that I tell, which is interesting because you and I have just met a few weeks ago. We're literally almost talking the same language, almost describing the same, along the same lanes of experience with a few decades in between, and it matters not. And what I read in the story that you are describing is that we are at an end of an epoch and a beginning of a new epoch. And as you were going through those significant periods in history, I would tell an adjacent story that, yes, perhaps we are completing a 3,500-year epochal transition. And in fact, what is occurring right now is that we are experiencing a convergence of few long-wave processes that are coming together. And they together produce what we are experiencing as the culmination of the epoch that's going out and the new epoch that's onsetting or that's incoming. And that is ultimately how we get to experience the bigger scenery inside of which we get to create the new stories that you are describing.
Yeah, I would love to hear your version because those distinctions sound fascinating. So what's the...
Well, that's the story. One way to sense into the story is to think that epoch is really a combination or a set of power structures or potencies that offer permissions for a certain story to unfold. In metaphoric terms, you could say that we are looking at a fuel tank that was proffered for humanity sometime in the 3,000 to 3,500 years long wave arc. And if you play with this crude metaphor for a minute, you'd think that if you have a fuel tank, every time, at every point where we are running to the point of exhausting the fuel in the tank, one of three things are likely to happen. We either need a refuel of the tank, or we need somehow a capacity to get connected to a whole new tank, or thirdly, we need to possibly discover a whole new car emerging to carry us forward. So if you took this frame of mind, you'd say, when you travel back through to the time of the 1,000 years of the emergence of world religions, that appeared when humanity experienced a rapid decline with festering conditions. And you could imagine those world religions ultimately culminating with the appearance of Jesus and what he represented beyond the person himself, potentially as a representation of a refueling time where the tank that was connected to the human system was receiving a new fuel to be able to embark on the journey and go through the kind of rescue and savorial process that was needed at the time. And then you proceed and you go again into dark times and dark ages, because that's what humanity is, the story of humanity. Every time we get a booster shot, no pun intended, and we see a gradual decline. And when there is a gradual decline, there is a gradual exhaustion of the fuel that unlocked or unleashed or released that new stage. And now you come into the phase such as the Renaissance on the arc to the Enlightenment and what happens in that age and what's coming online through the proliferation of knowledge earlier on, the invention of the printing press and so on, and what that release into the early stages of the scientific revolution before our friend Descartes becomes the agency of the separation of the inner and the outer worlds, and we all embrace suspicion as the operating model to validate truth rather than one that is ready to integrate the inner worlds. But right before that, you could describe that as a phase in humanity's story where we are getting connected to a whole new fuel tank. And that fuel activates permissions and perceptions and capabilities and way of doing and being and so on. So everything you are describing earlier in this conversation, which you and I have not rehearsed and I had no idea you were going to describe, to me is a validation point that we are now in one of those three transitions or all at the same time, right? We potentially are now being refueled, or we are potentially now connecting to a whole new fuel tank, and or could it be that we are actually getting to experience something else altogether, which is a deeper, more profound, more transformative change than even these changes, where a new car is coming online. And in that sense, the new car is a metaphor or a way of describing a new model of life, a new model of human life, a new model of human system that you were already describing in so many ways. That's the story that I'd be telling at a high level. If we went to a higher resolution level, we would break it down to the seven different natures and potencies, which we can do at another time. But this idea that could it be that we are now being refueled, connecting to a whole new fuel tank, and actually we're doing so inside a new model, a new car, is a compelling story for me to reflect on and imagine. And if that is the case, indeed, the question we asked right at the beginning, which is, so what is the operating system of this change, becomes so important, and then all the adjacent questions, such as, where do we see this operating system appearing? And you're describing that is happening in around transformative and transformation gatherings, transformational gatherings in cafes all around the country, all around the world. And we will ask, so how is this operating system revealing itself in the different domains, in the healing and well-being domain, in economic models, in education models, in entrepreneurial models? Where and when can we see that? What part can we play? How can we collaborate? All those questions, they become so very important because they take the story from an imaginary theological framing into an actualized, embodied, experiential, I get to play, I get to unlock my talent and my gift here and now with others, and we get to participate in this nursery of life, which I gather is what you actually probably mean when you talk about the midwifery process being becoming a midwife for the evolutionary process.
Yeah, absolutely. And I love how much you're introducing the word play, because it really is. I convene these things called possibilities playgrounds, where we invite people to come and play in possibility. And there's so much of this that's, hey, let's, like, we can have a model making playground where we sit around and intellectualize what might happen. And we can actually drop into our bodies or drop into the moment and play and see, what is it like to live life outside of all that story and idea of who I think I am and the concepts of the way things should work and might work, and actually play right here, right now, in this moment, and to just feel the childlike sense of joy and wonder and awe and inspiration that comes through, rekindling that flame in us. And to me, that space, that the space that we're in now, that quality of presence, that's what invites the hospicing out of the old and the midwifing in the new, is ultimately we can get together and construct what the future is going to look like all we want. And the future ultimately is a concept that we're thinking about right now. And so we are manifesting manifestation. We are in this moment from this quality of presence, bringing a new world into being.
What are some of the discoveries you're making when you are convening these playgrounds, and what are some of the highlights? Because when you're describing that, what I hear is that you are creating laboratories discover, to unlock, to download, to play with a new operating system. I'm very curious, what are some of the discoveries you're making?
Well, it's when we contextualize it and frame everyone up and everyone can feel safe to really surrender. I mean, in these playgrounds I convene, we don't have an agenda. We're coming into a space that's purely emergent, and we're coming in and going, what's alive in each of us? What's alive in the space between us? And we open up and start to surrender to that evolutionary pulse and see how it wants to have its way through us. And so the magic of these gatherings is in getting together and surrendering our need to control how things are going to go and surrendering our need to know what's going to happen. If we can actually buy into that and come in and dance in possibility and play in the moment, like, magical, crazy things can start happening. It's just, it's beyond understanding, like, the experience of it. I mean, we're having it right now, right? I mean, we had no idea what we're going to talk about in this thing. We're just having a blast. And and to me, like, that's part of this operating system that wants to come online with humanity right now, is like, do we remember what it's like in your body? Can you feel like and let it in and remember what it's like to have fun and to really connect with people and to show up with all of who we are in the moment and to see and be seen and to feel and be felt by each other from this place? Like, yeah. that in and of itself, that state of being, that quality of presence, that experience, that births new futures.
Like, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, well, for example, serendipity and synchronicity are not what they thought to be. They are more an expression of an entangled universe making itself known as you have people stepping into a different a presence, a different consciousness, a different sensitivity and attunement, and a different release in themselves. So how about if I just pile on this and add another layer to the story? Because it's one thing to tell the story of an epochal shift, an epoch culmination. How about if we describe this at the meta level as an epochal arc for humanity, which I try to sense into, and then as the way you are describing in those experimental playgrounds, how about if we integrate to the story and human model dimension, and we skate to the daring point to say something like the following, which is that what you are beginning to describe and what we are just talking about here, these are some early evidences, very early evidences of the emergence of what truly is and can be a new human model. So think of the human model, in my crude metaphor, the car that we were driving over the last several thousand years, that we were driving the car that we called Homo sapiens sapien, or the sapiens sapiens species, which was defined by the idea that we developed the capacity to be aware of our awareness and conscious of our consciousness. Hence, you could talk about a second person and a third person perspective, because you could actually watch the field of awareness and consciousness and discover that field as a theater of emergence. And that, by the way, that's where we separated ourselves from all other planetary beings that are aware beings, but do not necessarily have the facility of that extra layer of awareness of awareness. So how about if we said that all that was great and enabled us the transition that we came through over the last one way you could tell it 3,000 years, another way you tell it as a 10,000 year story. We can go to longer time horizons and on a different tangent another time. But how about if we said that what is now occurring is that we have the new Homo universalis coming online, and that what that means is literally what you were describing, which is that we get to play at all those different perspectives and we get to transcend all of them, not as a bypass act, but by way of integrating and embodying the whole. And that Homo universalis in that is not an intellectual or a mental modeling exercise, but rather a description of a new system that's coming online that is able to access the whole, and perhaps therefore we need to bring two additional descriptors to describe Homo universalis. One would be Homo connectus, and the other would be Homo evolutus. So Homo connectus would be the human model that's connected to the entirety of life, inside out, outside in, able to be present in a localized way or a universal way anywhere, anytime, where that facility is there, or at least being gradually activated. Perhaps we are describing a thousand year development story. Everything you are describing is the emergence of it is occurring now, the full realization of which may be a thousand year story, including the evolution of the physical model to adapt to the shape-shifting nature of the consciousness and energetic model that's being activated. And Homo evolutus in that, representing the idea, the different way of talking about, you talk to in the idea of being a midwifery for the evolutionary process, because what we are literally describing there is a condition where the human system, the person that you are, the person that I am, the person that we are collectively together, we become an active conduit, an active agency on behalf of the evolutionary process, where it gets to know of itself through us, because it can only find itself in this planetary arena through the experience of human beings who are there to be on the manifesting end, skating to the edge of what they thought they knew, to peek beyond and discover the beyond, and do so safely without blowing up the system, without blowing up themselves on the inside, because people throughout the ages, often when they skated to the edge of consciousness, they blew themselves up or they became destructive and disruptive to their environment. So I'd encourage that these are some elements of the new story that we are exploring and sensing into.
Yeah, absolutely. I what first comes up for me, just to the end again, I love the warning and the piece you gave too around just what it's like to skate on the frontier. I mean, if you look at concrete frontiers, like look at what it was like for human beings to, again, I'm going to use the West, but pioneer the West, right? Like you're literally going into unknown territory. And so in this dance of consciousness, the same thing's happening. And just having other people in your constellation who are playing on the frontier, who you can sort of shine the light together and go, is that where we want to go? And have you been there? And what's that over there like? And share learnings is a good resource, kind of network to create for people playing on the frontier, for sure.
The beauty in the awareness that you articulate there is two additional dimensions to this. One is the devotional servant leader awareness. The people that pioneered the West knew that they were doing this on behalf of generations to come. It's that same consciousness when in the 4th or 5th or 6th century you started as a mason building a cathedral, and you knew that not even your son will walk into the completion of the cathedral, but your grandson or the 4th generation. So that idea that we are participating in something that will ultimately see its full fruition after us. And even though, by the way, it's now moving faster than ever before, and the awareness that we are describing processes that are nonlinear. So by definition, there are times where it seems like nothing much is going on. And it's not true. A lot is going on. It's just occurring at an invisible level. There is some foundation that's being fashioned. There is some transmutation that's coming together. But it appears as though nothing is going on for a long time. And then there is a rapid transition that's totally nonlinear. And when you trace the evolutionary process, there is significant evidence that it doesn't follow the gradualist school of thought. It follows rather the quantum equilibria school of thought, where there are those profound leaps. And then again, could it be that we are now actually living through a period where we have both? There is a lot that's apparently changing, but there is even 10x or 100x that's not yet fully revealing, that's changing under the surface and will reveal itself over time. And hence the importance of not being attached to outcome, not comparing or contrasting or measuring yourself in traditional KPIs, so to speak, along this process, because you're actually participating in, we are having this conversation right now, and for all intents and purposes, there may be half a dozen conversations like this somewhere else on the planet through a slightly different frame of reference occurring right now. And as the 4-minute mile threshold was broken in one place and accelerated its release in other places all at the same time, this idea of portals of perception is really that idea that when few humans come through a portal of perception and come into the realization and actualization of a possibility they didn't see before, they dramatically accelerate the permission for other people to go through similar breakthroughs in themselves. And the chain reaction is so rapidly, it can unfold so rapidly that we shouldn't underestimate how quickly that process can take place. And so the readiness to be inside the experiences of the laboratories you're describing, those playgrounds, and not be all too important or heavy about it at all. Actually be present in the moment fully, almost to the exclusion of all else, whilst you are ready to embrace at the same time that unbeknown to you, you are perhaps playing with others, playing a similar adjacent play somewhere else on the planet.
Mm-hmm. And that's revealing itself more and more every day, at least in my experience, is that it seems that people who've been doing this siloed off in the world. I mean, you've shown up in my life, right? And then we're speaking the same language to each other, having known each other for a few weeks. And it's like, it's so evident to me that all these people have been siloed off in the world, creating these pods of awareness. And coming into these insights and playing on the frontier. And now, right, there's this integrating the integrators or the people on the frontier are connecting with each other and opening up the possibility to share learnings in a way that, I mean, the things that might have taken you and me a year to get can be in a minute, in a moment, just uploaded or downloaded or recoded in another. And so that's the, I mean, part of the honor of playing on the frontier is we get to, you know, go first and it's a little harder and then share learnings. And that goes both ways. I mean, we stand on shoulders of giants and are the benefactors of, you know, what I learned in a year might have taken humanity 100 years, right? So it goes both ways. But like you said, we're moving faster than any speed we can see, even faster than the speed of light in a lot of ways. We say this, the speed of love now in terms of how quickly evolution's evolving.
Yeah, beautiful. Curious term though you used, integrating the integrators, and because my mind immediately goes to, that's the job for somebody else or not. Maybe it's all of our jobs all at the same time. I think right next to the integrating of the integrators, there is the emergence of the emergents, and whatever that means. The reason I say so is because so much of what's occurring now has about it open source technology. And certainly here in Portals, we don't claim to and have no proprietary aspiration, no financial aspiration, there is no need to do so. We're free and would love to just proffer the benefit of the exploration on the cutting edge, not claiming that we know anything, but claiming more than anything that we want to be on that edge of discovery for ourselves with others. And the fascination of today, I said at the beginning that you are here as one of the next generation leaders, and I didn't actually know how much true that was going to become as you were describing your experience, because part of the leap of faith of our exploration today was more an intuition that we needed to do this conversation, and it was my calling in this was to create a space for your voice to come through. And I have this deep intuition that alongside with you, there are others in different spaces who are pioneering in their way. And some know of each other, and some are actually doing hard work deep in the trenches, almost in solitary confinement, so to speak, and would love to be enhanced and essenced by the work of others. So if there is a mission and a calling for the Portals project in that, is, as you said, being a place where these people can find each other, connect inside a bigger network of possibility, and be enhanced by the capillary action that's generated in the labor of love of others.
Yeah, and it's, I do know many of these people, and I'm happy. I know I've introduced you to one or two already. I'm happy to introduce more. There is a community that is finding each other, that is playing life from this place. And it's interesting, just the one generational shift with us, because, you know, I mean, I just turned 30 years old. I still live in both worlds. Like, I'm playing in this new world that you and I are in right now. And I also play in the new world in the sense that all my work is open source. I don't do intellectual property on anything. And to me, I feel like that's so critical if we're going to really open up into this new world to be able to open source and share all of our stuff openly and publicly. And I'm also in a place of being still relatively young and not, I wouldn't say young in my career, but younger in my career, and needing to have money to put food on the table or a roof over my head. And so there is this question around connecting and also resourcing the upcoming generations in terms of, like, you know, in some moments I'm dreaming up the possibility of what the next 1,000 years of humanity is going to look like. And the next moment I'm going, oh my gosh, where am I going to get some food for tonight? And so that kind of jarring flip back and forth between purely potentiated possibility and emergent consciousness back into survival consciousness is a pretty harsh pendulum swing. It's pretty jarring. And it's been so beautiful in so many ways. I mean, I can't tell you how liberating it's been in terms of surrendering stories and constructions and imprints around money from the fiber of my being. And it seems like part of what really wants to happen in the world now is creating ecosystems that nurture and support and nourish and cultivate people to thrive in capacities of exploring these questions and possibilities that we're wandering into today.
Well, we have to prove that there is progress and that your generation is more advanced than my generation, and that you do not need to do what I needed to do, because I was pursuing in my 20s and 30s adjacent inquiries, not perhaps as advanced as you are at this point, and ultimately resolved that at a later stage, I was going to make the material question play out of that. And I did so in a rapid manner. Mm-hmm. And the progress, the generational progress can be proven right if you can continue to follow this main thrust of your journey. And if there is a way for you to, through that, address the material question as well. So I will be here in support of that. And that can be a fun discovery, because the other option is less desirable, which is that you'll have to put it on the back burner and surrender to another agenda. But what you're describing is part of the initiatory nature of your journey, and part of the discovery and the learning, and actually part of the bringing online the capacities and the capabilities and the connections and the formations. These are all different words to the operating system that's coming online. And in a way, if you said, I want to skip that, I want to bypass that, you'd be escaping the initiatory ritual that you need to go through, because you're being tested for your faith and your devotion and your resourcefulness and all of the above. So it's glorious in all its manifestation. And it also needs to deliver in the practical sense.
Yeah, that's beautiful. And I always love that reminder. And it's funny, because there have been certain points in my journey where I haven't had any money and actually have had to tell people who are offering me money no, because it was so clear that, like, I could keep a codependent financial support structure intact and continue to receive money, but that I felt total dissonance energetically with the money and had no, like, it was like, no, I actually need to continue to go with what's resonating with me, which at the moment is looks completely absurd and like financially totally unstable. And like, I can't not follow this pulse and whatever it's asking of me in this moment. So I really appreciate you. It's like, in a way, celebrating that's a part of the process and the journey.
Yes. And in addition to celebrating, in the instantiation that you're offering, there is a revelatory property that what we're describing as homo universalis, that's beginning to emerge, actually needs us to attend to all the steps, all the rungs on the ladder. We need to go through the release of codependence. We need to find the individuated journey before we can become a universalis. All those are truly important, because if they are not integrating and embodying that, what you're describing is a fantasy land and another attempt to escape the planet or escape the body or any other bypassing story that we've seen in many groups and in all major religions. You've had spin-offs that wanted to offer that shortcut, sometime with mystical or esoteric inclination, and they always brought tremendous amount of pain and grief, and because ultimately they were attached to a certain outcome that needed to manifest with them personally, rather than seeing themselves as part of the bigger chain of life and the bigger revolutionary story. So all this is very important in the nuanced footwork and of dancing through the various steps and stages on the spiral, on the ladder, in the bigger system, whatever model you choose to play with.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, another old structure that's falling apart is this kind of guru, sage on the stage, enlightened person who has all the answers, because we realize we're all playing this game together. And I really feel like, you know, there are people who are showing up and making meaning from different levels, and people who are different mature than others, different levels of maturity than others. And it seems to me like something that we're really being invited to do is actually own more publicly that we're all playing this game. We're all in the evolutionary process. Like, I talk about the shadows I have all the time, or the places where I'm struggling or tripping and getting scraped up in life. And like you said recently to me, you're in the arena, right? Like, you're actually playing the game. And to me, it's a really a shift into the celebration that we're all this universal consciousness playing the game together. It's not just like, oh, I have all the answers. I've got, I can teach you what you don't already know. And way more us becoming aware of, like, remembering what we've known this whole time. So anyway, I say that in the sense of find communities where the leaders of the communities are playing the game with you and not claiming to be above it all.
And remembering in both senses, that to remember as in to bring back to consciousness, but also as once you bring back to consciousness, you reintegrate that as a member of your inner community. So in that sense, what you're describing is that the very model of what's arising now cannot arise. I don't know that I want to be so here is me playing at the editing myself on the fly. I wouldn't say cannot arise, but only a partial thing can arise through the individual formation. Much more can, because I don't want to even leave out the luminary teachers that have their role and their function. And mm-hmm. some of them may choose to not play in the arena, and they still have a part to contribute and play as well. Or else we impose on that everybody needs to play in the same game, and that in itself is another totalitarianism mm-hmm. and is a postmodern breakdown that we're carrying into the system rather than recognizing that there are actually different functional roles. And if the predominance was with a solo teacher, there is a major shift for the co-arising function, and that within that there are still teachers, and even within the teachers' communities, there are different functions. There are solo, quiet, semi-recluse pioneers on the cutting edge of various frontiers, developing models and ideas and formations and sharing with some. And there are the popularizers, and there are the integrators, and there are those that follow the one lineage path, and those that are fertilizing and connecting and cross-pollinating different paths and are discovering the unifying themes. And actually, you need those different functions. And the problem is whenever there is a drop down into the comparative consciousness where you begin to place those different formations in hierarchical structures, you lose the recognition and the value that actually they all operate in a bigger system, because when the liver begins to compete with the kidney, begins to compete with the spleen, we have a cancerous condition in the body. And instead of those different organs actually honoring their function, honoring each other, honoring that they are part of the whole, a greater system, and that the greater system that they are part of is by itself actually part of a greater system unto itself. So I would offer that caveat. And sometime on another occasion, we can do a deep dive on the double guru trap and the fascinating lesson. And inside that, I'd need to bring some visuals and actually talk a little slower through this. And it would be fascinating to map the step-by-step journey of the guru trap, both sides, from the student and from the guru. Why? What's the anatomy? How that happens? How can we learn from it? How can we be a little more enlightened into what is trying to emerge now? So, Forrest, this has been a most magical conversation. Thank you for your leadership. What parting sense, parting sentiment, parting... We're not parting anything, actually. We're not even pausing. What would you drop into the bloodstream of this conversation as we press pause in a moment or two as your final note?
Okay, so we already landed the conversation and we are in after conversation winding down, and at the sense that we needed to turn the recording again. So
how did we get to this? Just catch me up. What just happened?
That's a great question. I got to go into my head. Hold on.
I was saying that this conversation with you had proven the actualization of one of the intuitions that appeared with the inception of the vision of portals of perception, where we will get to play intergenerationally. And my hope and aspiration was to come and play and be in conversation with leaders in all those main domains of human expression. And that what I shared with you, that partly that was inspired by, this will now go probably 17 or 18 years. My son was in either his senior year or junior year, and we convened a circle of his friends in our living room. Actually, it was his senior year. And I felt that at the time, I felt maybe this is my legacy act. Now I'm inside seven legacy acts later in portals. But what I felt then was that we were convening important conversations. And one pivotal raw moment was when one of his friends, 17 years of age, said that, and he was vulnerable and he allowed himself to speak to that. And he said, I don't understand why we operate in the way we do. I don't understand why there is no transfer of wisdom from one generation to the next. I don't understand why I don't have conversations like we're having here with my parents, with my grandparents. I don't understand why I need to make all the same mistakes that they have made. Why do I need to fall into the same stupidities? And why can't we actually pick up from the last mistake, learn the lesson, and move the ball downfield? And it was a searing moment in the sense that he was expressing a personal pain and a personal realization, but he was also making a transmission to an entire generation that something like that needed to come into fruition. So we're talking early days of the internet. We're talking certainly before social media, before Facebook and so on. And it's now 18 years later, and some of his transmission and his calling is, for me, being answered in the conversation with you today and with what Portals is endeavoring to facilitate.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like I received his transmission when I was I must have been a few years younger, not too many, but I feel like I received that because I cried out for that many times in my own journey. And even at one point, I co-founded an educational nonprofit in my early 20s, and we set up a wisdom, you know, we had the circle of elders, and then we had a hierarchy, but it was an age-based hierarchy. It wasn't a wisdom-based hierarchy. It wasn't a developmental hierarchy. It was just age-based. And so it's an interesting time because with development, right, it's correlated with age, but it's not caused by age. And so sometimes you have people who are 18 years old operating at a later stage of meaning-making than someone 68 years old. And it's that just caused a whole bunch of mess for me coming into adulthood, looking in the world, begging for wisdom, begging for guidance, begging for insight, and continuing to be resold a story I had already lived through, decided wasn't for me, and was wandering into a new one. So I certainly appreciate the call for an intergenerational perspective and a developmental perspective.
Yes, and because what is also implicit in it, that as the two of us are in conversation here, we are already partnering with generations to follow. There is an implicit covenant that transmits down the timeline into their future. So, and in a way, if you like, that's part of my logotherapy, Viktor Frankl's logotherapy, which is that I hold them in thought, I hold them in my mind, and they make me a better person today. Because I wake up in the morning and I say, what would I do today? How would I live into today in such a way that when my granddaughter asked me about today specifically, she will ask me about, we are recording this on October 8, 2021. In 20 years, she will ask, what did you do on October 8? And I'll say, hey, Talia, what do you know? I was having the most extraordinary conversation with Forrest, and we were thinking of you. And we were thinking of your children and their children. It's easy to get emotional when you think about these things. But that is truly the calling of this time, because they are actually looking at us from the future right here, right now. They're looking at us from the future right here, right now, and they are begging, pleading, petitioning, beckoning, whatever is the verb, can you guys get on with this? So that's what I felt when you were describing the playgrounds. I felt you were already responding to the subpoena, the summoning of that those future generations, and you are playing on their behalf. So, Forrest, we just turned the recording again and got emotional in it for a moment, which is all right as well, because we feel so strongly about it. But when I go into these spaces, it breaks my voice because I feel so strongly about it. So I will let you be the last voice on this, please.
Well, I hear you saying beckoning and calling and these verbs. And the verb I want to introduce is singing, because I believe I mentioned to you one other time before. I actually hear I call it the song of the children, but there's a song I hear. I hear it when I'm in spaces like these. I hear the voices of children singing what I call the song of the children. And it's the way less the words of it. I don't know if I could even write down the lyrics, but the reverberation, the energy that the words are surfing on, the reverberation of it, the felt sense of that being an energy that's so deeply sourcing and infused with the world that's calling us into, that song sings into the what we're weaving for me.
Are you a musician too?
Aspiring musician. Emerging musician.
I would love for you to describe it with a few of the musicians that I'm working with, and for them to try to translate that feeling into melody. Yes. That would be beautiful. So we're going to set this, we're going to create that occasion.
Okay. Well, I just want to say thank you for having me. It's been so much fun hanging out with you here and exploring the way we have been. And I just invite anyone who gets to see this to come explore with us, to come play. We're all in this together. We're all part of the evolutionary game. We are manifesting manifestation, and everyone is a part of it, whether we're aware of it or not. So we can play this game consciously. And to me, it's the most fun game I've ever played. So I definitely invite everyone to really, come. It's a celebration party. Come hang out. Come have some fun. Come play.
Come play the greater game.
Yeah.
Thank you, Forrest.
Thank you, Aviv.
Thank you for listening to Portals of Perception. If you're enjoying these dialogues, we'd love it if you'd leave a rating and a review at ratethispodcast.com/portals. Visit portalsofperception.org for exclusive content. Please share this episode with a friend and be sure to subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.